Good afternoon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel this afternoon is, to my right, Justice Sue Walker. To my left, Justice Lee Gabriel. I'm Leanne Dofino. We have two cases set for oral submission this afternoon, and I understand both sides in the first case are ready. So if both sides are ready, if you'll call the case, we'll get started. All right. Patricia?
May it please the court. Texas law is inviolate that a party who knowingly receives goods and services must pay the value of that which was received. And whether the payment is required under a cause of action for breach of contract or quantum merit or even under a theory of substantial performance, the recipient must pay the value of that which was received. The jury's answer to question number four is in accord with that principle by holding that Bartuschnitzius was not excused and therefore should pay Simco for the equipment that it received and that it has been using for the past 4 years. In answering no to question number four, not only did the jury find that Bartusch was not excused from paying for that equipment, but it also found that any breach by Simco of any contract was not material, therefore holding that Simco was entitled to enforce its contract with Bartusch. Not every breach of a contract makes the contract unenforceable. To be unenforceable, a breach must be material. And in order for Bartusch to avoid paying for the equipment that it received, it had to obtain a jury finding that Simco had materially breached the contract.
But doesn't the judgment award Simco the monies owed under the contract, the $113,400?
It does not. It does not. It awards Simco nothing. It does not even give Simco credit for the $113,000 that was the unpaid portion of the judgment. The answer to question number four, that Simco did not materially breach the contract and that Bartusch was not excused, is well supported by the evidence.
That's not what question number four was. It didn't say anything about a material breach. You are implying or reading in to that question something that's simply not there.
In order, Justice Gabriel, for the jury to have found that Bartusch was not excused, or that Bartusch was excused, it had to have found that a breach by Simco was material.
Was there anywhere in that jury charge that it referred to a material breach?
Question number four defines what material is. The definition is included within question number four.
And did it say that in order to be, that the jury had to find a material breach to, in order to answer the question in the manner that they did?
It asked the question, was Bartusch excused from paying for the Simco equipment by virtue of a material breach by Simco?
That's and the way that question was phrased.
And it defined material as to what was a material breach. And the jury answered no. In order to find, to have answered that yes, they would have had to have found a material breach by Simco, but by the on the other hand, when they answered it no, they were saying there was no material breach that would excuse Bartusch from paying. But even if question number four had never mentioned the word material, even if it wasn't in there, Bartusch, in order to avoid paying for this equipment, had to have found, had to have obtained a jury question, a jury finding that there was a material breach. They had no jury finding that there was a material breach. And the Texas Supreme Court, in the Mustang Pipeline case, says that unless you have a material breach as a matter of law, there must be a jury finding that the breach was material. Not every breach of contract is will make a contract unenforceable. And in this case, the jury, all of the witnesses, including Bartusch's own expert, demonstrated that there was no breach of the contract, much less no material breach. They all testified that all of the equipment that had been included in the proposal was installed in the Bartusch facility. They also found that there was no, they testified that there was no manufacturing or installation defect. More importantly, all the witnesses, including Bartusch's own expert, testified that the equipment had the capacity to cool the rooms to 35 degrees. The jury's response to question number four makes further consideration as to what the contract was, or whether Simcoe ever even breached the contract, immaterial. The absence of a jury finding of a material breach, in that absence, Bartusch is required to pay Simcoe for what it received. The jury's finding that Bartusch was not excused for paying for the equipment also renders immaterial the jury's finding in question number two that Simcoe breached the contract. The record does not even support the submission of that issue. Bartusch's only argument that Simcoe breached the contract was its argument that its production rooms did not maintain 35 degrees after installation of the equipment. The record contains absolutely no evidence that Bartusch ever agreed to such a warranty. The only evidence that Bartusch is relying on for this 35 degree limitation is the handwritten notes of a lower level Simcoe employee that were taken 3 months before the contract was ever entered into. Bartusch attaches this to their SIR reply that they filed a week or two ago here, the handwritten notes. They're Bartusch's Exhibit 1. They're even Simcoe's Exhibit 29, but they are not an agreement. They do not demonstrate an agreement by Simcoe to warrant that there was going to be a 35-degree room temperature at all times in spite of proper insulation or operation under the agreement.
There wasn't any testimony by the representative of Bartusch that I told them I had to have it at 35 and they said they'd keep it there?
The only testimony before, no, there was no testimony, Justice Gabriel, to that effect. The only testimony about 35 degrees before this contract was entered into was these handwritten notes that where the Bartusch, the Simcoe lower level employee wrote down, Bartusch says the rooms need to maintain 35 degrees. That's not a testimony, that's not in the record, that's not an agreement from Simcoe. But even if there had been such testimony, it is barred by the parole evidence rule and by the merger clause in the contract itself.
What is the contract? Because it appears as though you're saying the proposal was the contract, which was not even signed.
I am saying that was the contract. The proposal had terms and conditions attached to it, which had a merger clause in it. In addition to that, and you're correct, we didn't get something signed back, but we did get an email, and it is, I believe, it's Plaintiff's Exhibit 12, the email from Bartusch's maintenance supervisor, we accept your proposal number such and such, use this number on your
purchase order.
Thank you. But that was the acceptance. You don't have to have a signature on our specific proposal, the email itself was the written acceptance. After that, we prepared, based upon the proposal, which included our terms and conditions, the purchase orders, and those are actually signed, and those are also plaintiff's exhibit, and I don't have the exhibit number here right now, but those are all put into evidence. They are all signed if a signature was necessary. But it was the email agreement acceptance, we will accept this. The parole evidence rule, that is the written contract. The parole evidence rule bars everything before that to change that written contract. In the absence of any evidence that Simco breached the contract, much less a jury finding that Simco materially breached the contract, the failure to award Simco its unpaid purchase price is reversible error. The award of damages to Bartush is reversible error for two reasons. First, Bartush's failure to pay 30% of the purchase price for the equipment is a material breach as a matter of law. Bartush cannot recover damages based upon a contract that it itself has breached materially. And failure to pay 30% of the purchase price is a material breach as a matter of law. Second, even if Bartush's refusal to pay the purchase price isn't considered material as a matter of law, Bartush failed to offer any measure of damages arising from a breach of contract that is allowed by either this contract or by the law of Texas. The contract specifically limits the terms and conditions, limits the terms of or the liability of Simco to the cost of repair or replacement of the Simco equipment. Even the Bartush expert witness admitted that the installation of the hot glycol defrost system was not a repair or replacement of the Simco equipment. Second, Texas law limits the damages for a breach of construction contract to either the cost of repair or completion, less the unpaid balance, or the difference in the value as promised and as received. And the Texas Supreme Court has held that strongly. Bartush provided no evidence at all of any repair that it ever made to the Simco equipment, much less the cost of any repair. Moreover, the cost to install an expensive hot glycol defrost system that cost half as much as the Simco equipment did initially is not a cost of repair, nor is it a cost of replacement. All of the Simco equipment is still there and still working today. Texas law is inviolate that the purpose of damages in a breach of contract case is to place the non-breaching party in the same position it would have occupied if the contract had been fully and completely performed. In this case, whatever breach there might have been of the contract by Simco, even if that hadn't occurred, there would have been no installation of a hot glycol system in there. Basically, this is a punitive, the award is punitive, not only in reducing or eliminating the or not letting Simco collect its $114,000 that is owed on the purchase price, but in making it pay for the installation in the Bartush facility of equipment that it did not sell and that does not replace or repair its equipment that it did provide. Thank you.
Lindy.
Good afternoon. Let me go through and discuss a few of these things. I don't normally, if it might please the court, I don't normally go into a lot of facts because I know the justices are very careful about reading the briefs. But let me go through a few facts because there are so many facts that have been run over in the argument. I want to make sure the court understands that Bartish is a 100-year-old company, over a 100-year-old company, that basically packages cold dips and seafood dips. So these are human consumption products. They had a contract they were bidding on that required product to be delivered at 38 degrees. So they went ahead and had their cold room, something a fourth the size of this room maybe, refrigerated down to 35 degrees. When we talk about requirements, that was the only requirement that Bartish ever set forth during this whole deal. It is not in the contract, but there is no reference in the contract to a temperature barrier or temperature ceiling, if you will. And we have specific testimony that Bartish relied on the Simcoe's expertise to provide a 35 degree system. Just like Justice Gabriel asked about the contract, it's a little unclear what the contract is because yes, there was a proposal. The email back was really picking option number three, the most expensive of the three refrigeration systems, and that's what Bartish chose to try to get to this 35 degree barrier. I think my best example of this, if I could explain and use an analogy, is we wanted an elevator, if you will. If you think of someone wanting an elevator, go from the first floor to the second floor. We say, we don't know what it needs, but we're going to be moving safes from the first floor to the second floor. You turn to them for their expertise. Got it. We have the notes when they walk through that's showing these, and we've included that in our brief, where their notes from their employees says it must maintain 35 degrees. It needs to be 35 degrees. They walk through the facility.
Did y'all ever agree who was to provide the shaft?
No. We sort of got the shaft, but what happened is on this elevator, if I can continue with that analogy, is they put in an elevator. I can take the boxes for the safe and go up to the second floor. But if I put safes in them, it won't move. They want to say, oh, well, you're still using our equipment. We can't get the goal that we had all along to deliver this 38-degree product by packing it to 35 degrees without their system. I think the evidence is absolutely clear. We had not only this testimony from their employee, which is Michael Winslow, we also had Jesse Wold, another Simcoe employee, that said he understood it had to be 35 degrees from beginning to end. They both told Danny Rose, the only employee they had testify, that it had to be 35 degrees. We had testimony from every single Bartish employee that testified that it had to be 35 degrees. And what we actually got, and the reason the payment wasn't made, the last payment, all the payments were made, the last payment, the room wouldn't stay during production between 50 and 70 degrees. Now think about it, you're eating food product, human consumption, we're having to go in, and if you look at our SIR reply, you'll see these had evaporators. It's sort of like an old freezer you used to have that would ice up. These would ice up these big evaporators all on the ceiling. We'd have to go in, shut down food production, spray it off with a power washer to melt the ice, and we had expert testimony from our expert that their air-cooled system would never work in a 35-degree environment. It can't defrost it fast enough.
Excuse me. I understand part of the problem was lack of insulation. Did y'all ever discuss who was responsible for the insulation, or did anybody ever...
Two things
was
on that.
Part of the agreement?
First of all, they did a walkthrough, and they knew it wasn't insulated. Second thing, they came in, and when Danny Rose, their employee, the third employee, came through, he said, we'll just overcompensate and make sure we have enough. The third thing is, we insulated the room. It made no difference after this. There's testimony. We insulated the room. Made no difference in the temperature. So, I think it's important to also remember that on top of this, the boss of all of Simcoe, this area, is a guy by the name of Stuart Reisinger. Reisinger, and we have an email, it's Defendant's Exhibit 15, sent an email to everyone at Simco saying, why aren't you getting this down to 35 degrees? If 35 degrees wasn't a requirement, why on earth was the boss of Simco saying, get it down to 35 degrees? Simco walked off the project. When these things keep freezing, these evaporators, it burns out the fans. It actually, we had testimony, it makes the fans run backwards because it blows the air against it. It can't escape, and it actually overheats the fans, and they over 20 fans failed. Simco just quit showing up. They wouldn't replace them. So what do? We hired an engineer. Now, we had relied, and our testimony was that we relied on Simco's expertise to find the 35-degree system, and that appears in Third Reporter's Record 187. We hired our own engineer. He's the one that said this will never work as an air-cooled system. We then went and fixed it. And the thing that's amazing about the argument I just heard is I think the justices, if I could just take time to show the things that Simco has ignored in their argument. They ignored that the reasonable and necessary cost to fix this was not only proved by lab testimony, but we had an 18001 affidavit under Civil Practice and Remedies Code that was put into evidence. It's exhibit number 47. They had no expert. They had no controverting affidavit to 18001. The jury simply didn't believe their one witness, Danny Rose. There's no other way to look at this verdict. They believed the Bardish people. They ignored their own employees' notes. They ignored their own employees, both Jesse Wold and Michael Winsow. They cite snippets of testimony, but the jury didn't believe those snippets. There's no way to believe the snippets they quote from Danny Rose and that verdict to have come out.
If they the also ignore limits the damages to repair or replacement of Simco equipment. How is putting in this whole other system, that's not a replacement of the Simco equipment, and that's not a repair of the Simco equipment?
Well, it is repair, and here's why we say that. First of all, it's not a whole new system. This is a glycol system that's cooling this whole area. And as all this is a heater that plugs in, if you will, to the system that superheats it. So admittedly, any ice on these evaporators is defrosted. So we went through all that, and again, I'll just direct the court's attention to our expert's testimony in the 1801 affidavit. This is the only way to fix this. This is what was done. They had no expert to say that this was more than was needed. This is not the reasonable cost, anything along those lines. So if you consider what else they also ignored, is they ignored that it was their duty to submit that materiality issue. That wasn't our duty anyway. We submitted it like the Texas jury charges. So it was their duty to do it. If there was an abuse of if there was an error in the charge, this court looks at that under abuse of discretion standard if it was harmful, and they can't show that it was harmful. As far as parole evidence, I mean, I'd hate not to talk about that for a minute, but parole evidence, as we all know, is not a rule of evidence. It's a rule of substantive law. And it basically says, and with good reason, if you got all these discussions over here, you finally enter a written contract, you shouldn't be able to go back to all these discussions. If it's important enough, you should put it in a written contract. Well, what we have here is nothing in the contract that talks about the temperature. Nothing. Talks about the manner or the services that are being provided. It talks about the equipment only if it's a contract. I mean, everybody assumes here's the proposal. Yeah, we'll take option number 3. And really what superseded that were the purchase orders, which were our purchase orders, not theirs. So I'm just saying that when you look at the parole evidence, we didn't try to vary the terms of an unambiguous agreement or contract by our testimony. What the testimony showed was this was the threshold. This was the only requirement of our system that we needed. We need 35 degrees. We don't want people to get sick because this isn't 35 degrees, because we've got to deliver the food at 38 degrees. So they didn't tender their own issue. They breached first. The jury found that clearly. We're relieved from any further obligation for the $113,000 or anything else once it was. And again, their elevator would only move boxes. It wouldn't move what we hired them to do. We need to move safes. We need it 35 degrees. We don't need 50. I'll also point...
Why wouldn't CIMCO be entitled to an offset for that amount?
I'm sorry,
why would not CIMCO be entitled to an offset for the amount of $113,400 when you've admitted you didn't make the last payment?
I think that's a close call, but the way I can best answer that is they breached first. We had to go in there and fix the system. And as far as the system, it took that, everything we had, and $187,000 more. We had our expert testify that about 10% was for, we bought a little excess, if you will. So that's why it's 168 versus 187. And again, we had an 1801 affidavit as to that cost, and they had no controverting expert affidavit. They had no expert. We had an expert. As far as we can go into the quantum merit, I'm trying to cover all these in case any of them concern the court. They filed a motion for summary judgment after the judgment was after the verdict and said we're entitled to quantum merit. They not only had no proof of quantum merit, what the value was, they had no expert that was qualified to testify. They did have an expert that was designated, but he didn't show up at trial. So they had no one that could testify. And on top of that, just in an abundance of caution, we filed an affidavit as a response and a response to the motion for summary judgment. And really, motions for summary judgment are in the pretrial section of the Rules of Civil Procedure, and it's a pretrial matter. So with that, I'm going to give back some of my time. We ask the court to affirm, unless there are questions, we ask the court to affirm the trial court's judgment, and we ask them to add the appellate attorney's fees that were found by the jury.
Thank you. Tricia.
I don't think it's necessary for the court to get into the evidence, but I have heard it misstated so much here today that I feel I need to point out certain things to the court. First of all, is the timing. All of this talking about we had to have a 35 degree room temperature, that the only mention of that, and the only time they cite to it in their brief, the only time I've ever been able to find to it, is that one note that they came up here and said today. They can talk about how important it was, but they have cited to you, and there no evidence in the record, and there is no evidence that CIMCO ever said, we will warrant your room for 35 degrees. We installed equipment that had the capacity to cool that room to 35 degrees and below. But we don't warrant the temperature of your room. We can't. There are too many things that control the temperature of the room that we don't have any control over. And Danny Rose, in his testimony, and I've cited it in my brief, explained, we can't guarantee a room temperature because we don't know. For example, this room, if you open the doors and all the windows, you can have the equipment that'll cool it down. But you can, by virtue of your failure to insulate, your failure to operate the equipment properly, not get the temperatures that you say are so important to them. There's no discussion before that proposal about 35 degrees. If it was so important, and in all the discussions that my colleague has referred to occurred after the installation was complete. In fact, if you even look at Plaintiff's Exhibit 6, that's the Bartush emails going back and forth where they are arguing about what temperature actually needed to be, and they didn't want it lower than 40% or 40 degrees. And that was in November before the contract was even entered into. So all this important, this discussion, this didn't go on before they accepted our proposal. If it had, they would have put it in writing, and they didn't. The court doesn't even have to consider that, I don't believe. Please remember that there were issues submitted against SIMCO about whether we violated the DTPA, whether we violated, whether we committed fraud, all on this 35-degree issue. And the jury answered in the negative on every one of those. The jury found here specifically there was a Bartosz was not excused from paying its bill by virtue of a material breach. It was their issue to find a material breach. If they were going to say that our contract was not enforceable, they had to come up with an issue that said SIMCO materially breached. That was their issue. It was not ours. With respect to whether or not there was a signed contract, I would refer the court to Plaintiff's Exhibit 12, whereby John Pearson emails Michael Winslow and says, "We accept your proposal." Nothing in it about 35 degrees. The issue about insulation and operation, I brought out and have cited to it in my brief those temperature charts where it showed for a period of time our equipment was cooling those rooms to 32 degrees. And they were cooling those rooms during 24 hours a day, even on weekends. I put those temperature charts specifically in front of the Bartosz president, and he admitted, yeah, those were the temperature charts, and your equipment was bringing it down to what we needed. But what they also showed was that there was an improper operation of this equipment. This equipment could cool those rooms and did below 35 degrees. But you had to give it a chance to defrost when you weren't working there. It wasn't hard. We didn't walk away from this contract, and there is no evidence in the record that we did that. We installed timers. We said, look, just when you're not working and producing food, turn it off. Turn off the glycol and let the fans draw the air over the coils, and that evaporates them. That was an air defrost system that we told them we were going to provide them. And we told them specifically they were getting an air defrost system. And the email that is Plaintiff's Exhibit 9, we told them you're getting air defrost. They never wrote back and said, no, we need hot glycol. We told them that was included.
Time's up.
Thank you, sir, ma'am. And we'd ask that the case be, the judgment be reversed and remanded to the trial court with the award of damages to Bartosz to be vacated, that a determination be made as to SIMCO's attorney's fees, and that SIMCO be awarded its unpaid purchase price.
Thank you. We appreciate your argument, appreciate your coming here today. And your case is submitted. You're released to go about your business. You're free to stay and watch the next case if you want to, or to leave the courtroom. It's up to you.